This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. I'm Michael Monks. There is no statewide mask mandate for schools in Ohio, and that has left a piecemeal approach to masking among districts to mitigate the spread of COVID-19. The school year started off with many districts implementing quarantines and shutdowns as cases are detected within schools. Lebanon City Schools, for example, closed at the end of August for 3 days due to a surge in cases. Also in late August, in Bethel Tate High School, more than 100 students were reported absent due to COVID, sending the school into remote learning for a few days. There is no mask requirement in that district either, though they are strongly encouraged. And joining us now to talk about the situation there is Bethel Tate Local School Superintendent Melissa Kircher. She's on the phone. Superintendent Kircher, thank you so much for being with us.
Thanks for inviting me, Mike. Appreciate it.
It's our pleasure to have you. I'm looking at the Bethel Tate Local School District COVID-19 update for today, September 14th, and it says you've got 4 confirmed firsthand positive cases of COVID-19 among students and 119 quarantines, and then among staff, 1 confirmed firsthand positive case of COVID-19 and 4 in quarantine. What does that mean in trends? Is this unusual? Is this higher? Is this lower than where you've been since the beginning of the year?
Well, at the beginning of the year, we were hit pretty hard with athletics because when one person becomes positive on a team, there's no social distancing at all. And so everybody, according to the Claremont Health Department, is going to be quarantined. So we lost 4 sports teams, which put us down at the high school with over 100 some students being quarantined with only maybe 4 positive cases. So at one point in time during that week, we're going to go up to over about 250 in the district. Honestly, about the 4th day of school, we do not have a mask mandate. It is optional but strongly recommended. So obviously in the classroom setting, we're having to quarantine students. They are sitting 3 feet apart, but if they don't have a mask on, they're going to get quarantined. If they have a vaccination or a mask, they're not going to be. But really the sports issue was probably what put us down in the first week with the high school. So, and then towards the end of that week, transportation, we have 12 drivers here and 7 were down, not all with COVID, but a few had other extenuating circumstances, so we could not bring kids into school. So we were on remote learning for 2 days there with no transportation. But we're back in now, so we're holding steady for a while.
Well, that's good to hear. Superintendent, I'm wondering about something you just said. It sounds like these quarantines, people who might have some sort of exposure to a positive COVID case, are students in the school who are either not vaccinated or did not wear a mask to school. If you are wearing a mask or if you did receive the vaccine, you don't have to quarantine if you come into this contact. So that suggests that the district sees value in both vaccine and mask wearing. So why aren't masks just required?
Well, that is a board decision here. It's a local decision made by each district this year in the state of Ohio. Last year it was made by our governor. And each district has taken a different approach to that.
So when you juggle the position of the Board of Education, which voted not to mandate masks, but yet you have this quarantine policy that seems to support the wearing of masks, how does that conclusion become reached?
Well, remember, the quarantine is actually through the health department. It is not the district that mandates. We follow the health department's mandates of that quarantine. So we are not technically issuing the quarantine. We tell the health department who has in close contact and contact tracing, and then they tell us to follow their guidelines, and that's how that's determined. So our board doesn't determine the quarantine, and I think that confuses some parents because obviously they get a letter from me, but it's not me determining the quarantine. It is the health department.
What do you think, and I don't know if you're keeping any type of actual data on this, but what does it look like among the student population for those wearing masks, percentage-wise?
You know, that's a great question. We asked the health department, too, the other day. The kids that go into quarantine, you mean how many of those actually become positive and then are home and shouldn't be, or that?
First question, I mean, we will talk a bit about that, but how many kids, basically, are wearing masks to school? Is there a percentage that you've been able to observe?
I would say 20%.
So that,
and I think I'm doing that. I'm on the high side.
Okay. What is the response from students on this issue? If you've got what sounds like, anecdotally anyway, 80% of the student population at Bethel Tate Local Schools opting not to wear a mask, what are you hearing from students about it?
You know, the only thing that with students, obviously in the primary, it's more we hear from parents than students, and then in the high school, they have started to wear them more because they don't want to be quarantined. But they're not. They don't see it as a huge issue until they're sent home, and then it does become an issue because obviously you can't be in school. So
we're talking with Bethel Tate Local Schools Superintendent Melissa Kircher. What about staff, Superintendent? Does staff seem to be more open to wearing masks while inside the buildings?
Oh, absolutely. Half of our percent of our staff is vaccinated, and I think most of our staff would like to have a mask policy where everyone was wearing them. I think they would feel safer with kids in their class and with teaching. So, and they don't want to send kids home either.
What do you recall from the school board meeting where it was decided not to mandate masks? What was the position of the board?
You know, in a meeting, no one tells why they vote no or why they vote yes. And it was a very strong turnout, a 5-no, that we would not do mandatory masking for a short period of time. So I couldn't tell you everybody's personal opinion on that, but that is, we recommended it because I want to keep kids in school, and I'm not going to get into the face mask debate of whether I think that helps. Those are the requirements in Ohio, 3 feet apart if you're in school and wearing a face mask or vaccinated, not to have to be quarantined. And obviously my goal is to keep kids in school and not learn from home. I think it's the best environment for them. So,
how many students do you have in your district?
About 1,500.
So you have about 1,500, and currently 119 are in quarantine. That would mean, Superintendent, that they are not in school today.
Correct.
Are they learning remotely?
They are allowed to do that, yes. They can get on. They can borrow a laptop or use one of their own and remote into the classroom.
What are your concerns?
But that's a careful balance.
Yeah, sure. Go ahead.
Well, with teachers, I think they do a great job, and we've come a long way since the beginning of this pandemic with how do we teach remotely and do it effectively. Obviously, in the classroom, that's the best place with a teacher. However, when you get so many out of their classroom, when over half my class is now home and I have half in, it is a difficult platform to teach both ways that way. So that's when the school district has to make a decision.
What are your concerns going forward? Because we are still seeing an increase in cases across this region, particularly with this Delta variant apparently leading that surge. So do you have concerns going forward, or do you feel optimistic?
Honestly, I never believed we'd be where we are today, still with the pandemic. I thought last year we did a great job. This year, I think because of less mandates and less structure, it's a little more loose, which has caused public education to be in the middle of a battle between parents and the government, and I hate that. I hate the thought of that. I think we have learning loss, and the only way to recapture what they've missed is to have them here, and so I'm a proponent of doing whatever it takes to keep them in school.
Will you talk a little bit more about what you mean by public education being caught in the middle of a battle between maybe government and parents, I think you might have said?
Well, I think that last year was pretty straightforward, and we followed the guidelines and the mandates from the governor down, and now, you know, they want us to make the local control to make those, and I think those are difficult for individuals in every different school and community. However, that's public education. They have an elected board, and that's how districts are ran. So, you know, someone asked me the other day, well, are you disappointed? I said, well, of course I'm disappointed, but I'm going to follow the policy of the Board of Education, for whom I work for, to the best of our ability in keeping kids as safe as possible.
Do you think it would be better if the state came out with a mask requirement for public schools?
Yes, I think that would take, I think people, the angst would be off of us. We need to worry about education, we're following, and we work great with our health department, but some of the decisions, should they really be made by local officials? I have to question some of those.
Is the concern that local officials are more directly accountable to the public? I mean, they might even be neighbors for example, in a community like Bethel Tate Local Schools. And so there might be a bit more pressure on a Board of Education member to follow what might be politically popular there right now rather than what might be medically or scientifically best.
Of course. I think in anything we do, that is the risk we take.
Again, we're talking with Bethel Tate Local School Superintendent Melissa Kircher. Superintendent, you mentioned that you didn't think we'd still be basically in this position at this point in the pandemic. And last year, obviously, so much of our lives was disrupted, but we adjusted. And, you know, there was a light at the end of the tunnel, it felt like, earlier this year with the vaccines rolling out and restrictions lifting and case numbers plummeting. And I think there's frustration across the political spectrum for a variety of reasons that we're all still in this position. So what is the main challenge for you as the leader of an educational organization, a school district? What's the biggest challenge now when you think of this moment compared to last year's challenges?
Well, one, how do we keep kids in school and communicate with parents to the best of our ability, helping them understand where we are and that we're just as disappointed as them that we haven't turned a corner. Because obviously at the end of the school year last year when they lifted the masking, we could go wherever we wanted, people were ready for that and they were happy. And I think they thought we were going to return to some type of normalcy, but I'm not sure for a while we're ever going to have what people consider normal again. And so then to come back to school, and obviously the Delta variant, we never had sick kids at the beginning of last year, hardly ever. We didn't quarantine any sports until probably wintertime, and obviously kids now are sicker than they were last fall. And we're dealing with that, which a lot of people don't want to be here. I don't want to be here, but this is reality. So making the best of what we can do right now.
That's an important note that you made, Superintendent, that kids are sicker this year than they were last year with this Delta variant. We were certainly seeing that in statistics across the country, that more kids are being affected, impacted, infected with COVID, and they are suffering medical consequences of that, with some reports of hospitalizations and even deaths. Could you share with us a bit about what the community, the broader community there in the Bethel Tate School District, has to say about that situation? When you look at the evidence that there are more cases among children, severe cases among children, what is the community's conversation right now?
I think there's definitely a portion of the community that feels this is kind of like the flu and that it should take its course. And if kids are sick, send them home. But if they're not, that we don't want them quarantined. I think the quarantine is where people really have the issue. It is not the fact they care about their kids. They'll take them to the doctor. They're very responsible up here. But it's the quarantine that has set it off because, you know, like as in the flu, you know, somebody gets sick in the room, we don't quarantine because somebody had the flu. But now, because of this, we're quarantining, and they don't understand it. I mean, and it's still here, and they thought it would have been gone. I think there's another portion of our community that once would support mandate masking, but you know they're probably not going to go out there and be the ones that are going to cause issues because, one, they can't put a mask on their child and send them to school. It's optional, so they can do that if they want to.
I just want to reiterate, Superintendent, that the policy, and again, you fix my understanding on this. It's the health department there in the county that determines the way quarantines are dealt with. But if the kids are wearing masks in school and someone in the classroom does test positive for COVID, those who wore masks do not have to quarantine. That's right.
As long as they're 3 feet apart. Absolutely.
And so it seems that the parents who might be upset about the quarantine situation have a pretty simple solution that they could take.
Correct. But it's a choice. It is a choice that they make. So, like I said, we will do the best we can working with them for the choices that parents make.
Melissa Kircher is the superintendent at Bethel Tate Local Schools. Superintendent, thank you so much for taking some time to talk about a very difficult situation. And we wish you the best moving forward in the school year.
All right. Thank you so much.
A researcher set out to try to simulate what could happen with so many children in one building breathing the same air. What she found is up next. And later, a national bike trail system includes Ohio as a key component. We'll talk about it. This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. Thanks for listening to Cincinnati Edition On Demand. Did you know you can have the show delivered straight to your smartphone every day? Just go to your favorite podcast listening app, search Cincinnati Edition, and subscribe. You'll be able to keep up with all our great conversations with newsmakers, public officials, and other interesting people from the greater Cincinnati region and beyond on the go, anytime, anywhere. It's great for those days you can't tune in to catch us live. Weekdays at noon on 91.7 WVXU. And this is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. I'm Michael Monks. A North Carolina scientist and others studied COVID in schools. In this research, Dr. Julie Swan simulated what could happen with so many children in one building breathing the same air. Her study is one of six CDC-funded simulation groups. What the model showed, Swan and others, is that more than 75% of susceptible students would become infected within 3 months. And joining us to talk about it is North Carolina State University Industrial Systems Engineering Department Head and Allison Distinguished Professor, Dr. Julie Swan. Dr. Swan joins us on Zoom. Dr. Swan, thank you so much for being with us.
Thanks for having me.
I want to note right off the bat the conclusion of this study before we get into how the methods were conducted. It says, quote, without interventions in place, the vast majority of susceptible students will become infected through the semester. Universal masking can reduce student infections by 26 to 78%, and biweekly testing, along with masking, reduces infections by another 50%. To prevent new infections in the community, limit school absences, and maintain in-person learning, interventions such as masking and testing must be implemented widely, especially among elementary school settings in which children are not yet eligible for the vaccine. And so, Dr. Swan, I don't know if you were able to listen to our first segment while you were waiting for this segment to start, but that's a local school district here in the greater Cincinnati region where masking is not required, and they're paying the price for that with more than 100 students currently in quarantine. That's nearly 10% of the student population. Your reaction to school districts that are not taking mitigation efforts like masking or weekly testing?
Well, we've heard this from a number of school boards across the Southeast. Some of them reversed their decisions after they got lots of students who were infected or quarantined in the first few weeks of schools. It has been a really tough set of decisions locally in all of these different school boards, but it is very clear not only from modeling, but also from the empirical evidence of what happens when a school opens up, that widespread masking across the students, teachers, and staff in the schools is keeping not only children from being infected, but also the adults in the community.
And last year, when COVID first shut down schools and then there was an attempt, you know, to kind of come back, kids wore their masks, and that was mandated usually at the state level. And now that that decision has been relegated to the local boards of education, perhaps, as we discussed in our previous segment, local boards of education members might feel a little more pressure from their immediate neighbors to go along with what's politically popular in their particular community rather than what is scientifically or factually evident. So your study here that you did conduct with other researchers specifically mentions the highly infectious Delta variant. Can you give us an understanding of what's different about this school year and the previous school year as it relates to young people and the spread of COVID inside?
Yeah, great question. So Delta and this school year are different. You can see it by looking at the hospitalization rate right now for youths under age 18. And those hospitalizations have been growing in Ohio and elsewhere. COVID has caused many more hospitalizations in kids than flu normally would. And that was during a time period when our kids were at least partially protected because of distancing and masks and virtual schools and things like that. Delta is about twice as infectious. And what if you were in a crowd of people and nobody had Delta and you introduced one person in that crowd, over the time period that that person is infectious, which could be a couple of days, that person could infect anywhere from 5 to 9 people in that time period. there's the story of the classroom in California where they were using masks, but the teacher took off her mask to read to the class, and they really were doing a lot of contact tracing and all of that. And they found over the course of a couple of days that half the kids in the class became infected. And that was partly because that teacher had removed the mask during that reading time period and unfortunately didn't know that they had the disease. And so that's one of the things that is happening in schools across the country that are opening up without masks. If you think about it, if you think about a classroom that might have 20 or 30 kids in it, plus the teachers, they are breathing the same air for 6 hours. And these are, you know, we don't have open air classrooms with windows and things like that. I mean, they're really breathing the same air. I wouldn't sit in a room with 20 or 30 people breathing the same air without a mask right now, and I am double vaccinated. That is just an environment that is asking for respiratory viruses to spread from one person to another.
We are talking with Dr. Julie Swan, North Carolina State University Industrial Systems Engineering Department head, and Allison Distinguished Professor, part of the research team behind a recently released study titled COVID-19 Projections for K-12 Schools in Fall 2021, Significant Transmission Without Interventions. So let's talk about why this research was conducted. I imagine the Delta variant's rise over the summer might have been a bit of a catalyst for why schools in particular needed to be evaluated.
Yes, absolutely. I do have two kids myself who are in public schools. So there was a little bit that was oriented around thinking about it from that standpoint. We've also been working with a lot of state and county health departments over a couple of states. And the county health departments were also saying, well, what's going to happen when schools open back up? And here, where I live in North Carolina and where my family lives in Georgia, we knew that school boards, some of them were choosing not to have masks. And knowing what I know about the Delta variant and how the virus spreads, I thought that sounded like a tricky situation that it may be that people didn't fully understand what that would mean, especially in elementary schools where vaccination, most of the kids are not eligible for it yet. So that was the genesis of it. And we've been working on COVID models for more than a year and for pandemics for more than 10 years. And so we took one of our models and made some changes to make sure that it was representative of K-12 schools and looked at a couple of different scenarios. And I look at COVID models all the time, and I understand disease curves. But I will say that I, too, was a little bit surprised at how quickly so many of the children in a population can be infected when, you know, you introduce an infection into a classroom, and then you potentially have some infection that may come from outside the school as kids are interacting in sports or with siblings or other kinds of things. And, you know, we're told that COVID will touch all of us. And I do believe that all of us will either be vaccinated or have the disease or both. But putting, you know, scores and scores of children in classrooms really sets the stage for the virus to run through those populations very quickly, and it is much more severe than flu. We didn't see it last year, partly because our kids were masked or in hybrid school or in virtual school. But you can see it now because the pediatric intensive care units are completely full in many states during these peak time periods. And you can see it if you look at the numbers for what's happening this summer and fall in comparison to what would happen in a normal flu season. So there definitely is risk. Vaccination is the first intervention, but of course, kids under 12 are not eligible yet.
It's striking, this study, because it says a lot of what we should have already known and what we probably do already know if we've been paying attention to factually presented evidence and the health organizations, that mitigation efforts do work in stopping or lowering the amount of COVID spread in a community, even in classrooms. So this study ultimately concludes a significant decrease in cases in schools if there are vaccines and if there are masks being worn. And so it must be frustrating for a mother like you, not just an educator, not just a researcher, but to know that there are so many folks still in this country who oppose these mitigation efforts. And at this point in the pandemic, even more frustrating than earlier on, because we're supposed to know so much more by now. Could you share some perspective with us on that?
Oh, yes. And I'm hearing from parents all over the country that heard about our work. And I'm most often hearing from the parents that want not only masking, but in some cases, they're advocating for testing or other kinds of measures. And I see what happens in these local school board meetings where you get people who are very much in favor of one side or another, and often very emotional and really worked up about a lot of these things because everybody feels very strongly about it. As a parent, it breaks my heart to think about these children in classrooms that are not protected, not only because potentially of not being masked, but also the ones that are not vaccinated. I think among 12 to 17-year-olds in Ohio, the vaccination rate is somewhere around 34% that are totally vaccinated. And, you know, we can do better than that. And I hope that we will do better than that. And it's not just Ohio, of course, where I live, we need to do better as well. It is so hard for individuals and the public to really get their head around what goes on with this pandemic and what we expect to continue going on, because we have not had this kind of situation really in our history for most of us, what we've experienced. And so it's just almost unimaginable that we would have so much of our society being driven by this disease that we knew nothing about, you know, SARS-CoV-2 virus in particular, 2 years ago. Those of us who study pandemics know that pandemics can really have a big impact over multiple years, 2 to 5 years from some of those past pandemics. And I know that everybody wants to get back to normal, and I do too, but rather I'm thinking about it more. What are the things that we need to be doing in our workplaces, in our schools, in our communities to help us get as much back to normal as we can while still making sure that our hospitals are not completely full, and that then further increasing our mortality rate for all kinds of different things?
We're talking with Dr. Julie Swan, North Carolina State University Industrial Systems Engineering Department Head and Allison Distinguished Professor. Dr. Swan, one of our listeners has a question and is on the phone line, so I'll go now to Dr. Sawyer, who is on the line. Hi, Dr. Sawyer. What's your question or comment?
Hi. Thank you for taking the call. Dr. Will Sawyer. So I'm very involved with having people not self-inoculating their facial mucous membrane. So my questions are, in your studies, did you look at the surface contamination in the classrooms, as the hands are a significant, play a significant role in the direct inoculation, particularly of the eyes, and the nose and mouth mask doesn't cover the eyes? Did you also add face shields and any of these to see how that changed the behavior and helped reduce the incidence?
Dr. Sawyer, thank you so much for the call and posing that question. And Dr. Swan, I'll give you the opportunity to answer Dr. Sawyer's question if you can.
Yes, absolutely. It was a great one. You know, the way that we dealt with it in our model is that we assume that masks are not perfect, that they could be lower quality masks in some situations or not well fitting around the edges, and that they reduce transmission, but that they do not completely prevent transmission. And so that also then allows for infections that might come in through the eye, as was mentioned. And we also recognize that lunch times are very difficult, and kids will often remove their masks to eat and look very carefully at what schools are doing in that lunch setting to see if there are things that can be done to reduce disease transmission there. So in our basic model, we assume that masks reduce infections by 50%. We do have some other ones where we look at greater reductions, closer to 70%. I think of that as being high quality, well-fitting masks that are reliably worn and enforced all of the time. But you could also think of it as greater hand washing as well.
Dr. Swan, this study is fascinating to read. It does seem to reinforce a lot of what we've learned about mitigation efforts over the course of this pandemic. And as we begin to say goodbye here, what are we to do with this? Because here's another study saying, yeah, wear a mask and be vaccinated and keep your distance and make sure that there's good airflow if you're indoors. And, you know, we talk to representatives from school districts who are like, yeah, you know, we know all this, but our school board's not going to let that happen. I mean, how do you not become despondent when we continually reach these same conclusions scientifically, but yet politically or popularly, we ignore it?
Well, one thing that we've seen is that school boards do change their mind over time. You know, a few weeks ago, there were lots of school boards in our state that had decided to not use masks. And I think we're down to about 3 or 4 that are not using masks now. So that's one thing. Two, I do think that if the state, the governor can step in and make masks mandated in schools, that will save lives, not only of children, but of the broader community. I know that that has its own political pressures, but I do think how can we expect all of these individual school boards to know everything about public health and mitigation during a pandemic in a school environment? They don't necessarily bring that expertise to the table, but the state has resources and experts in healthcare that can advise at that state level. Third, I would say that I like to remember it's not always about facts. Sometimes it's about feelings. And so we have to take that into account when we're dealing with humans and to try to understand what is really driving someone to take a particular position. It could be that it's the frustration that the pandemic is not done yet, or it could be that they don't like the feeling of something on their chin or nose. But if you can understand what's really driving it, that you can do more to really address that root cause and have empathy for where they are at that point. And I hope that people just continually revisit these decisions as we do see more people being affected and really track the numbers over time.
Dr. Julie Swan of North Carolina State University. Dr. Swan, thank you so much for the time you gave us today, and I do hope we get the chance to talk again.
Thanks for having me.
And you've been listening to Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. Our producer is Selena Reeder. Our assistant producer is Nick Swartzel. Our technical director is Josh Elstrow. Our theme music is composed by Rob Fetters. You can find archives of our program online at WVXU.org. I'm Michael Monks. We'll talk again tomorrow.